I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And that makes this Stuff You Should Know, the continued political edition, because we did presidential pardons.
Oh, yeah.
So we're all political now.
Well, this is the time of the year, you know.
Yeah.
It's beginning to look a lot like political season.
I'm going today to cast my ballot for Georgia to start letting everybody buy booze on Sundays.
I am too. I appreciate you doing that.
No, I'm voting against it.
A lot of people on the AJC, they had, you know, the opinion like, what do you think? And the people that were against it were all just like, well, you got 6 days a week. Like, why change it? Why bother? You know, it's just the one day. Is it really that big of a pain? And it's like, what is lost on these people is that this is the United States of America.
Yeah.
It's about freedom. It's not about buying booze on Sunday.
Yeah.
It's about somebody else telling you not to when this is 2011.
Yes. Nice, Chuck.
Yeah.
Well, let's stop talking politics and instead let's talk animals. Let's talk biology. You know much about donkeys?
No.
Okay.
Not really.
Well, donkeys are a member of the horse family, but they're a different species from horse.
Now, donkeys and mules are not the same, correct?
Allow me to
continue. Are we getting there?
Because they're different species, it makes it really weird that they can not only mate, but procreate. But donkeys and horses do get it on.
Okay.
And what they produce are mules.
Ah!
So a mule is actually the offspring of a male donkey, mm-hmm. a jack, and a female horse, a mare.
How did I not know that in 40 years?
A hinny is the offspring of a female donkey, a jenny, and a male horse, a stallion. So a mule or a hinny can be boy or girl. It depends on what their parents were.
So this is actually the second podcast where we've started with equestrian definitions.
Yes.
Interesting.
And I also want to give a little shout out to the donkey. Apparently, a donkey, they're very well known for stubbornness, of course.
Sure.
But apparently, it is a misinterpretation, as I understand it, of their incredibly well-defined sense of self-preservation. They are not very easily frightened or forced into doing something they think is not in their own best interest, which comes off to us as stubborn jackass donkey mule who won't go down the trail
when they're like
the gold.
No, I could fall off that trail.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I think humans should start listening to their donkeys. And to make sure that people don't accuse us of
donkey bias?
Yes. I want to talk also about elephants, too. Because if you talk donkeys, you have to talk elephants and eventually electric eels, which we'll get to later.
Is that the Tea Party?
No.
I thought they might have had their own
animal. I don't think so. I don't think it's electric eels.
That'd be pretty awesome.
They do have that carved up snake.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Don't Tread on Me snake that was carved up into the 13 colonies. But that's definitely not an electric eel.
Okay.
Elephants are a horse of a completely different color. A couple facts of them. Their societies are structured by female. If you see a group of elephants walking around, they're all female.
Okay.
They live in the same family their whole lives.
That's nice.
The elephant pack is led by a female.
Mm-hmm.
It's matriarchal. And males spend their whole lives like just basically doing their own thing, hanging out, and then coming around to mate every once in a while. And these lives can go for up to 82 years.
Wow.
And elephants are pretty amazing animals. They are very well known to mourn, scientifically proven to mourn their dead. The first study that established that was in 2005 that found that elephants will return to where their loved ones have fallen and visit their bones and skulls and tusks and,
wow.
and stroke them and just kind of meditate over them for a while.
That's very sad.
Right. So you have donkeys, you have elephants, you have American politics.
That, I think, is as interesting as the story of how they became symbols of politics.
I would say it's more interesting.
All right.
It depends on your your leanings. This one was written by Sam Abramson. You remember him?
Oh, yeah. How
little,
can you forget Sam
Abramson? He was a good guy.
I wonder where he is.
I have no idea.
I doubt if he listens.
I do, too.
So, Thomas Nast, if you're going to start the discussion on how the donkey and the elephant became symbols of our two political parties,
mm-hmm.
there's only one place to start and end, and that is a German, oddly enough, a German-born political satirist and illustrator, cartoonist.
That's the way to put it.
Woodblock cutter.
Yeah, really.
Named Thomas Nast, who was born in Germany, came over to New York City when he was six, and was a natural. He was a shoo-in right off the bat with this artwork stuff.
Right. Yeah, he was pretty good. You can tell. And if you haven't heard of him, you've still seen his stuff. Somewhere out there, you've seen a Thomas Nast illustration. Anytime you think of 19th century political cartoons,
mm-hmm.
what you're envisioning is a Thomas Nast illustration.
Or Uncle Sam?
It depends. The one I always think of is Flag. Oh, Thomas Flag? I can't remember his name. Ugh. Anyway, he was the one who painted the I Want You.
Oh, really?
Uncle Sam, yeah.
But Nast is the one who popularized the first images of Uncle Sam. Is that right?
Well, Uncle Sam was around him. He was the one who first put him in like a star-spangled suit and made him tall and gaunt, modeled after Abraham Lincoln.
Gotcha.
But Uncle Sam was, if I may.
Please.
He was possibly named after a guy named Samuel Wilson.
No, not Abramson.
No.
Okay.
Who was a meat packer from Troy, New York in the early 19th century. And who got a great reputation as being very honest.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got a government contract to send meat provisions to the troops during the War of 1812. And these crates would come arrive stamped U.S. And the troops came to mention that this was Uncle Sam or Uncle Sam Wilson,
gotcha.
Who came to be a symbol for the United States as a whole.
And they were providing, Uncle Sam was providing food for the soldiers in their minds.
Yes.
That's nice.
Nothing but horse meat.
And Santa Claus, the modern Santa Claus as we know him, was sort of captured by Nast as well. Is that right?
Yeah.
You got a story there?
I do.
Okay, let's hear it.
So people say that Thomas Nast invented Santa Claus, and that
not
is
true.
It's pretty close. There was St. Nick.
Mm-hmm.
There was Sinterklaas. There was all these conceptions of Santa Claus based around St. Nick. Thomas Nast was the one who associated St. Nick, who still today in Germany, he's honored. He has a day on December 6th where people give one another gifts. But
right.
It's not Christmas.
Right.
Thomas Nast took the gift-giving idea associated with St. Nick,
mm-hmm.
put it to Christmas for Harper's, and then added the elves as well.
Ah.
So the whole idea of Santa Claus coming and bringing gifts was Thomas Nast.
Wow.
Yeah, in like 1862, I believe, for the cover of Harper's Weekly.
Thank you, Thomas Nast.
And then by 1881, he was fat and jolly, thanks to Thomas Nast as well.
Well, how else is Santa going to be? Lean and mean?
Yeah. He was a little skinny, and it's off-putting to see a skinny Santa Claus.
What, the earlier ones?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, you spilled the beans on that spoiler. Harper's Weekly was where Nast worked for 24 years, from 1862 to 1886. And that is where he made his name, like, big time. He was influential. He was countrywide famous. I don't know about world famous. I don't know if a whole lot of people were world famous at the time.
Yeah, he was definitely like a household name, I think.
Sam. Yeah, he was a rock star. Yeah. This is when a political cartoon really meant something and actually held sway in elections.
Yeah.
Not so today.
Yeah, because, you know, so many people were illiterate. Which is kind of unfortunate because Thomas Nast drew in a time where you could draw a bunch of stuff and be like, oh, this doesn't make any sense, and just put labels on them, apparently.
Yeah.
You can label absolutely everything, and it's like, oh, okay.
This tree
and
is...
And then sometimes he would come to your house and explain it to you as well, if you still didn't get it. Yeah.
Well, and I mentioned woodcut. These he did not draw these in pen and ink until later, which would end up being his undoing. We'll get to that. But he actually carved these things. And that's how they printed these. These are carvings.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at the detail. It's striking, Josh.
I agree. I didn't realize they were wood carvings until about 30 minutes ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you're still reeling.
Yeah. I'm a little... I'm still queasy. I still have the taste of vomit in my mouth.
All right. So politically speaking, Nast was a Republican, but Republicans at the time aren't exactly what we might think of today. It was a shift over the years.
Yeah, that's
how many people know this.
It's a big eye-opening thing. It's like learning in eighth grade that the United States, like, pretty much brought genocide down on Indians in America. You know, like, learn, like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, yeah, there are cowboys and stuff, but what do you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Same thing with this. Like, that Republican and Democrat is a fluid term. Well, really, it's like conservative and liberal are the two opposing forces at all times.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, actually. Yeah. And at the time, I guess Republicans were very much socially liberal.
Yeah.
And he was on board with that and ended up having problems with his own party because of that.
Yeah.
Which influenced his cartoons.
Yes.
Can we call them cartoons?
I think, yeah. Okay. Political cartoons. It's an acceptable term.
So donkey, should we start there?
Yeah.
The donkey first came about in 1870 was the first time the donkey made its appearance. And that was in, and I have these printed out too, that was this one right here. The Copperhead, Northern Democrats were called Copperhead Democrats.
Yep.
They opposed the Civil War, and he thought they were racists.
Well, that's what Sam calls them.
Well, that's what Nast thought of them though, right?
Right, but I think that that's an overbroad description. I think
that
Copperhead Democrats were made up of, like, they were the crux of the peace movement.
Right.
They also, basically, they were made up of people who said it's unconstitutional to force a country together if one part of it wants to secede.
Right.
There were a lot of different voices, but yes, they were very powerful, and Nast definitely opposed them for sure.
And a copperhead is a snake, in case you didn't know that, so it's definitely a derogatory term.
It's a deadly snake.
It is a deadly snake that we have right here in Georgia. So in 1870, he showed the donkey kicking a dead lion. The donkey, and like you said, he would just literally label them. He would write words on the body of the animal saying, this is what this is. No subtext. The donkey was the Copperhead Press, which was, he was taking a jab at the press and not necessarily the party. And then the lion was Edwin M. Stanton, Lincoln's Secretary of War, who was dead.
Yeah.
And dead in the photo. And it looks like there's a little eagle looking on even.
Yeah, he's
from on high.
Like, what are you doing?
But the eagle's not labeled.
And I think that's the Capitol in the background.
Yeah, I think so.
So, yeah, he would just write on it. Like, on the side of the donkey, it says Copperhead Press. And it looks like, have you heard of, I think his name is Wim van der Waal or something like that. He came up with the cloaca machine. He's an artist from the Netherlands. He has, like, this whole exhibit where he, like, tattoos pigs.
Really?
Yeah. And, like elaborate tattoos.
Huh.
And it looks a lot like this.
Oh, really? Like the woodcut?
Yeah.
Or just that style?
That, like, the donkey having writing on the side of it.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
It's been graffitoed.
So that is, that was the first appearance of the donkey. The next one was in 1874 when Republican Ulysses S. Grant, was vying for a potential third term, which freaked a lot of people out.
Right. Well, he freaked people out twice.
Oh, did he try to do that twice?
Well, they tried to get him to run for a third consecutive term in 1876, but he poo-pooed it. But then he went and traveled abroad and came back and said, I'm a better man. I think I could be president for a third time, third non-consecutive term.
Right.
In 1880.
Right.
Yeah. Which is why that this third term panic, the 1874 cartoon, was when people were like, whoa, you can't have a three-term president. Even though you could constitutionally.
That's right. So if you look at this one is like, this is crazy. This looks like a Grateful Dead album cover or something. It's got a donkey in sheep's clothing labeled Caesarism, obviously referencing Julius Caesar as some mad, power-hungry tyrant.
Yeah.
And then there's all sorts of other stuff going on, and we'll get to that because the elephant plays a part in this one as well.
I like the giraffe a lot in that one. He's going kind of upward. It looks like he's wearing a vest.
Yeah, he's wearing some sort of a suit.
Yeah.
Giraffe in a suit. And that was called Third Term Panic.
Yeah.
But again, even though he was symbolizing the Democratic press mainly with the donkey, it sort of stuck as the Democratic Party, even though that wasn't his original intent. Is that right?
I don't know. I don't think he originally intended it, but I think over time he just came to see it as, I think it, yeah, it popularly was picked up and kind of forced him to use it later on.
Right.
You know?
Even though the Democrats still haven't, that's not their,
right.
their symbol officially.
No. They've never adopted the braying jackass as their official party symbol.
I wonder why.
Although the Republicans have. They've adopted their symbol.
That's true.
But there's some stuff in that Third Term Panic thing that kind of pops up that was clearly important to Nast. Like inflation? There's like a plank he wrote inflation on?
Yes.
So apparently at the time there was a big struggle going on about abandoning the gold standard or printing as much silver as you wanted or issuing paper.
Right.
So you could basically cause inflation so people could pay off their debt so they could buy stuff more cheaply, that kind of thing. And apparently Nast opposed that, the inflation, because that's like a plank that's broken over this pit.
Right.
That the elephant, the Republican vote, I think is what it is.
The pit is about chaos, right?
Right. There's chaos because farmers can pay their bills kind of thing.
Gotcha.
So he was like, he was definitely a social liberal, but I get from this that he was also not a populist.
Yeah.
Like I think he liked people in theory, but not in practice.
Right. And then, you know, this is important because he was a guy who only drew what he believed in.
Yeah.
Which would also further prove to be his undoing later on.
Yeah. Well, you got to take your hat off to somebody like that, you know?
Well, he'd made his name. I guess he was like, do you know who I am? I'm the nasty man. I'm not going to draw anything I don't believe in.
Nice. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where are we here? There was another example, a presidential candidate grabbing a donkey labeled Democratic Party by the tail.
Yeah. That was Thomas F. Bayard.
Yeah.
And he was grabbing it by the tail. He was actually one of those guys who fought to repeal the issuance of paper money, legal tender that doesn't really mean anything, rather than use gold. And so I guess Nast approved of him even though he's a Democrat.
And that's this one right here, right?
Yeah.
And that's he's trying to keep the donkey from falling into a pit, another pit labeled financial chaos. It's a very popular motif at the time, I guess.
Yeah.
And then in the background of this one, you do see the dead Republican Party elephant with is that Lincoln hovering above him?
Sadly. Probably. I think Nast kind of had a thing for Lincoln.
Had a thing for him?
Yeah. It's strictly in an idle way, with an O.
So that is the donkey. Does that fairly summarize how it got started?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, he started just kind of using it and associating it with the Copperhead Democrats, Democratic press, and then ultimately people just said, well, I can't read, but I see that you're making fun of the Democrats, and that's a donkey, so the Democrats are donkeys.
Right.
And Ness said, okay, we'll go with that. Oh, and also, by the way, The Wizard of Oz apparently is a popular allegory for politics at the time, including that whole gold standard abandonment.
Was it meant to be?
Yeah.
Or was it? It was?
Yeah. Frank Baum, who wrote it, was a political writer for many, many years before he wrote it. And the Yellow Brick Road is the gold standard.
Gotcha.
And then Dorothy's shoes originally were silver, not ruby.
Uh-huh.
And so silver and gold was a call out to this free silver idea of printing 16 silver coins to every gold coin printed to make money cheaper and abundant.
Right.
So
interesting.
Yeah. A lot of subtle stuff going on in the late 19th century, you know?
Well, they're way more obvious now, I guess, because they can be.
Yeah, at least we don't label our political cartoons as much. It's still a tradition that's upheld.
It is.
But you just don't see words all over the place.
I don't read a lot of political cartoons anymore, do you?
I just don't run into them very often, but I almost always enjoy them when I do.
You
especially
do?
That Mike Lukovich guy. He is good. He's a local boy, too.
Yeah, Lukovich is good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a big Family Circus fan.
That's rarely political.
You know, when Jeffy, like, tracks mud through the house, and it's like, ugh, Jeffy.
Have you seen the altered version of those?
There's altered versions of everything.
These are pretty funny. They're really, really dirty, but they're funny.
Oh.
Dirty's not the right word. They're just, like...
Filthy?
Yeah, they're filthy.
Okay. All right, so moving on to the elephant. This was Nast's party, the Republicans at the time. So obviously his cartoons about the elephant are going to be more positive, I guess.
Or sad.
Yeah, true. Like the dying elephant.
Yeah. I think he probably intuitively knew that elephants mourn their dead, which makes you sad when you think about elephants, which is why he chose the elephant.
I wonder if he knew that.
I don't think he did.
That's appropriate, though. Before he actually ever, it keeps saying penned in here, but carved his first elephant, it was used twice before, once in 1864 in a Lincoln campaign literature piece, and then in 1872 by Harper's, but it wasn't until 1874 that he used it.
So I can imagine the Lincoln use of it was very intended to be derogatory.
Yeah, probably
like you're all jackasses.
Right. So that's Third Term Panic, the one we already talked about, was the first Republican elephant that he had carved.
Right.
Okay.
But the first appearance of the Republican elephant and the Democratic donkey together as those two as representative of the whole party was the Stranger Things Have Happened cartoon where he's got the donkey by the tail.
Oh, okay.
As far as I know, it's the first
one. That's what that one was called?
Yeah. Stranger Things Have Happened.
In 1876, there was one called The Political Situation, pretty straight up. Uncle Sam is confused. He is labeled the vote of the people, and there's a two-headed elephant choosing to decide which road, Democratic road or the Republican road, to go down. That one's fairly self-explanatory, I think.
It is, but it's also kind of confusing because...
Uncle Sam's confused.
Yeah.
So what is he saying? The Republicans can go one of two ways at the time?
Well, no, because it's two-headed, so I would imagine it's more representative of the two-party system. I think Nass was pretty drunk that day.
You think so? What else do we have here?
My favorite. I haven't seen it yet. Did you print it out, the one with the tombstone?
No, I couldn't find that one.
I thought this was very, sweet. But Nast, apparently, when Rutherford B. Hayes, ran for president, he won the 1876 election.
Okay.
That Grant didn't go for the third term for, right? And Hayes apparently said that he would only run once. And I guess he wasn't a very well-liked guy because he was one of those presidents who won through the electoral vote but lost the popular vote. And apparently lost the popular vote pretty bad. And so his whole presidency was in no way, shape, or form a mandate. It was very representative of the fact that this country, our country, was still very much torn apart from the Civil War. And so Nast created this cartoon where this elephant that Sam describes as bruised and battered is crouching down at a tombstone of the Democratic Party, which I thought was pretty cool because it's like he had the sense that there was still, no matter how acrimonious things got, that these two parties were still American parties.
Right.
That there's still a whole wild world out there for us to hate. Why are we hating each other?
Yeah, true.
You know?
Yeah, that is sort of a nice sentiment.
Yeah. But I don't want to characterize Nast as an isolationist or even a nativist. Like, he had one of his Uncle Sam paintings, or I'm sorry, carvings, was Uncle Sam and Columbia, right? Liberty. Hosting a Thanksgiving dinner with all the peoples of the world, which included some Chinese people, some black people, some Native American Indians,
right,
and a host of others.
But not the Irish.
I don't think the Irish were present. But it was like a world, or suffrage for all, you know, equality for everyone in the world. Come on, come on, you're all invited.
Right.
It was pretty cool. He was definitely not a bigot, as far as I could tell.
No, it doesn't seem like it.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, you know, what Sam points out is, and it's true, it's kind of striking that 150 years after this or so, that these are still the symbols. I mean, the Republicans officially adopted the elephant, but he points out that a lot of that was due to just how influential and popular Nast was at the time.
Yeah.
It just became part of the national fabric.
Yeah.
Because of him.
There were some good quotes about him after, well, while he's working, even apparently, Abraham Lincoln called Nast his, quote, best recruiting sergeant during the 1864 reelection.
And this is while he was traveling around the country heckling, what's his name?
Oh, Stephen. It's not Stephen Decatur. What was that guy's name?
I don't know.
We'll go with Ambrose Bierce, even though it's not right. I can't believe we don't remember that guy's name.
I know. My head is just bulging.
Huh.
Mark Twain said that Nast won a prodigious victory for Grant. I mean, for civilization and progress.
That's Mark Twain for you.
What a guy. He can turn a phrase.
So he, you said that he kind of gave up his, career in a lot of ways by being stubborn as a donkey.
Yeah.
Especially, he was apparently in very good with Fletcher Harper, who founded Harper's Weekly. Do you read Harper's? No, it's monthly.
No.
Lewis Lapham just left, and I got into it right before he left,
uh-huh.
and I got sucked into Harper's, and then he left, and now I'm like
It's not as good.
It's just not as good. Why? Why did this happen to me? Why does everything bad happen to me? But it's still very good. And it's been around since the mid-19th century, which is pretty impressive for a magazine.
Oh, yeah. It endured. Endures.
But Junior came aboard and didn't really side with Thomas Nast, right?
Yeah. I mean, Nast had a lot of freedom under Fletcher Harper, but Joe Junior kind of tightened down the ranks and was like, hey, man, don't be so square. People want to be entertained. So there was a bit of a shift in the way American public wanted to, you know, what they wanted to read in magazines.
Yeah.
And then...
people wanted to not be bothered anymore.
Yeah. They were sick of it. So the other death knell, though, was they went to photochemical reproduction, and they didn't do the woodblock cuttings anymore. And apparently woodblock, even though... I mean, it looks to me like incredibly detailed.
Yeah.
It gives you a lot of leeway to make mistakes that you don't get with pen and ink and paper.
Right.
So his shortcomings all of a sudden stood out. They're like, this guy kind of sucks.
Which is just not true. Santa Claus,
right?
Yeah. So he ended up like penniless, as you love the term.
I do.
Yeah, don't you love the term penniless? I was listening to an old podcast, an
Did
old
I
episode.
Say I love that?
You're like, I hate that term. It's so no one doesn't have a
penny.
Oh
yeah, yeah.
I think
yeah.
It was the Niagara Falls one.
Jeez, I need to lighten up back then, huh?
but anyway, he was very much broke, and he tried to open his own paper, Nast Weekly, which lasted 6 months. And luckily, he had a friend in Teddy Roosevelt, right?
Yeah, and he appointed him to consul general to Ecuador. And NASA, I guess, was like, all right, I guess I'll go to Ecuador.
He's like, is there money there? Because I'm penniless.
Yeah, that's better than doing nothing. And it actually was not better than doing nothing because he got yellow fever there and died 6 months later.
Yeah.
Dun, dun.
So that's a pretty weird end to that guy, if you ask me. But
yeah, I didn't expect yellow fever.
He was 62, and at the turn of the last turn of the century, he... 62 is not bad. That's a pretty good run.
For back then.
Especially being a household name. Once your celebrity's over, you might as well, I mean, you're dead anyway. you haven't actually died yet, but you might as well be, you know?
Jeez, oh boy.
So there you go. The donkey and the elephant. If you feel like we've explained this, if you now understand it and gotten to the bottom of it, you are not paying attention. Because it's still as convoluted as ever.
No, it's not. It's all from Nast.
Well, don't you wish, though, that there was like some sort of like, oh, here's the reason why he chose the donkey. And, oh, of course he would choose an elephant. It's totally intuitive. No, it's the ramblings of a madman who used to carve stuff into wood blocks, and Fletcher Harper published it
right.
For the consumption of everybody else.
But now you know.
Knowing is half the battle.
That's right.
So if you want to learn more about Thomas Nast, if you want to read one of the extraordinarily rare Samuel Abramson articles on the site, you can type in the words, "Why are a donkey and an elephant the symbols of the Democratic and Republican parties?" ? You could probably also just type in donkey and elephant and it will bring it up.
Sure.
So I think I said that you should type it into the search bar. If I didn't, you should type it into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. Since I said that, it's time now for listener mail.
Josh, bison feedback from Canada. Burlington, Ontario, specifically. Guys, your recent bison podcast put me in mind one of the coolest experiences of my life. When I lived out in Alberta, I'd often go hiking in Elk Island National Park. I was halfway around one of the park's longer trails one day when I looked down... saw a fresh buffalo chip. You know what that is.
It's poop.
Scat. As I pondered what this meant, I heard a snort, and about 10 to 15 meters in front of me, which is a length that I don't understand.
It's 30 to 45 feet approximately.
Okay. There was a bison.
It's like 10 to 15 yards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I get yards. 10 to 15 meters in front of me was a bison. I froze. I was alone, hadn't seen another soul on the trail. I knew roughly 8 kilometers, whatever that is.
I have no idea.
from the trailhead in either direction, and I knew this animal decided to charge, I was as good as dead. We stared each other down for a few minutes. I don't know what was going through its mind, but I was weighing my options. If I turned around and it decided to charge, I might not hear it coming and wouldn't be able to take evasive action. If I went forward, I might provoke it and be in deep trouble. I knew I couldn't stay there all day, so I decided to take a single step towards it to gauge its response. Good move, I think. I moved towards it. It gave a snort and turned its head away from me and ran into the woods to my right. Very cool, I thought. No sooner had I thought that than from my left came a thundering herd of bison stampeding across the trail. There must have been 20 to 30 of them running in front of me.
Awesome.
Following their lookout. That was a scout, I guess.
A scat scout.
Into the forest. I stood there utterly awestruck for several minutes before I decided to move forward to where they had just been. For the next 15 minutes or so.
Buffalo chips everywhere.
Yeah, I bet. For the next 15 minutes or so, I kept looking over my shoulder just in case they were hiding behind a tree, ready to pounce on me like a giant cartoon kangaroo. Interesting imagination. So they didn't pounce. He made it back safe. And he just says, if anyone finds himself in this situation, probably won't happen. Don't do what I did. I got lucky. These are wild animals, not petting zoo bison. I could have easily been trampled and left to die. So that is Gordon C. from Burlington, Ontario, Canada, Earth.
Weird ending there. He doesn't give any suggestions of what to do.
No, but he did say that it was the most amazing experience of his life, seeing the thundering herd of bison right in front of him.
I will bet.
I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I want to add something from the Bison Podcast. We got a tweet from some guy recently saying, hey, I was really disappointed you guys used the word Indian instead of Native American. And I was like, oh yeah, Mr. Smart Guy? Well, how about I provide you with the link to an article that has a poll that shows that a clear 49% of all Native American Indians prefer the term Indian over Native American.
So 51%?
No, no, no. 37% prefer Native American, and then like 16% or whatever the rest is prefer something else.
Don't call me, I'll call you.
All right. So the not a majority, but very close to it, prefer Indian over Native American. So chew on that, pal. We were doing something right for once. And he goes, no, I'm talking about people from India are offended by that, like me. And I was like, oh, your Twitter handle is Sanjay something. And I haven't responded yet, but I hadn't considered that.
Yeah.
Like, I knew we were doing right by Indians of North America. But I hadn't considered how Indians of India, also known as Asian Indians, felt about it. And I'm curious to know. So I would like to hear from everybody.
Yeah.
From Asian Indians and North American Indians. And I'm sure I'm just like offending everybody in any way, shape, or form right now. But let's figure out how to establish this. I want to know.
I agree. I never considered that either. So.
And even if you're not Asian Indian or American Indian.
Yes.
We want to hear from you if you have a good suggestion, too, about how to end this conundrum. You can tweet to us, like Sanjay did, at SYSK Podcast. You can go to Facebook, also known as the 50,000, at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. And you can send us a plain old-fashioned email at stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Childproofing people's homes is hard.
But Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.